This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. This is Ben, aka Boston Nugo. We got a big show this week. We got Dan McCabe on, my favorite independent wrestler on the planet, and we talk for a while about his career, the 582 concerts that he's been to in his lifetime, and his wrestling exploits and his love of soccer. So that should be it's a long interview. It should be a very good listen. But right now we have Matt, a.k.a. Confirmed Shoot, on for a couple minutes just to talk about his love of the Toronto Raptors. Matt is a longtime Toronto Raptors fan. I want to have him on for a few minutes just to gloat. Would that be a good way to talk about it, Matt?
I think that'd be a good way to go with it, Ben. Yeah, we can gloat a little bit. You actually messed up the intro there. I'm here to talk about the Eastern Conference champion, Toronto Raptors.
I'm sorry. I didn't give a good enough introduction. The Eastern Conference champion, the NBA Finals appearing Toronto Raptors. How long have you been a Raptors fan?
Since day one. And actually, I'm going to surprise you because you don't know this, and I really haven't told this story. I actually grew up a Boston Celtics fan.
Oh, really?
My dad was a Celtics fan, and I've learned over time, my dad was actually kind of a bandwagon fan because he was a Cowboys fan and a Celtics fan. That's a little questionable, but, yeah. You know, I grew up, that was his team, loved Larry Bird, saw Larry Bird play at St. John Arena, basketball Jesus, I won't even argue that. But basically, once he retired, I didn't have any connection to the team. I kind of drifted away from the NBA for a little bit, and then they introduced the Raptors. I loved the logo. That's all it took for me when I was like 14 years old. And I've been there ever since. You know, Damon Stoudemire, Marcus Camby was my first. That was my guy.
UMass's own.
Yep. I was a UMass fan there for a minute, too, when all Ohio State basketball was doing was getting arrested. So I bailed there for a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, we're kind of the same age.
Yeah.
You know, the Raptors came around when I couldn't really watch them on TV. I saw them like three times a year, maybe. So, but, you know, you follow the box scores. That was back when you would watch SportsCenter to actually see if they won or not because you didn't know.
Of course.
Like, you can't even fathom that anymore. But, yeah, and I mean,
you pick up the paper the next day to see the box score.
Exactly.
That's what we did.
I ran fantasy basketball in high school out of the newspaper.
I'm right there with you. Right there with you.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, we got pretty good there with Vince Carter. We got close. And then it just kind of – they were bad for a while. You know, Chris Bosh, he broke my heart. But, you know, these last few years have been really fun. And, you know, there's that one week a year where it stops being fun because you just go on Twitter and everybody's making fun of your team. You know, and you're just looking at Barney images. This was the year I felt good about Kawhi. You asked me about Kawhi when it happened. You know, I wasn't.
And you rubbed it in my face the second that you guys cut in.
And, you know, the funny thing is, it looked like I had that plan, but I was vanity searching my own tweets trying to see if I predicted it. And I just stumbled upon your thing. But, yeah, I mean, I felt pretty good. I wouldn't say that I thought they were going to win the conference. I felt good about it. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not super confident about the finals, but hey, man, we made it.
Playing with house money at this point.
Exactly. And, you know, I won't rule it out. That's all I'll say. I think they match up pretty well.
And Kawhi is playing otherworldly right now.
He's the best player in the league. Yeah. I mean, I'm biased, but I think he's the best player in the league. And I'm still not confident he's staying.
Yeah.
I'm a little more confident than a lot of people are. Like, I think there's a decent chance, but yeah.
There's no one playing better right now, I'll give you that much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, everything changed when Van Fleet started hitting shots. And if he doesn't hit shots in the finals, they're not going to win. You would hope Danny Green will play better. But, you know, and I'm not going to pretend I'm some expert that knows everything I'm talking about. But but I think they've got a shot. If they lose...
That would be the keys, you think, to winning. Van Vliet starts hitting shots. Danny Green plays better. That would be the way they upset the Warriors in this series.
Van Vliet has to play well, play like he did basically the last couple games of the Eastern Conference Finals. Danny Green's got to step up, and then I don't know. Ibaka's probably the other X factor because I don't know how much Gasol is going to be able to do in this series, but Ibaka stepped up big time those last couple games. And then, I mean, obviously, you know, Kawhi's got to play great, which I have no doubt he will. And then Lowry, he usually plays well against Golden State. Curry usually torches him, but he torches everybody, so that's fine. And Lowry got a little bit more flack than he ever deserved. His offense struggles a little bit, but man, the hustle and the defense, you know, he was never this terrible. And I don't want to take shots at DeRozan, but yeah, that was the
yeah.
So, but hey, man, it's house money. It's been fun. It's nice to not choke, which again, that was overblown too because they were losing to LeBron every year. And
we were too.
Still, yeah,
we all were. Everybody in the East was.
Exactly. And you know, I thought for sure I didn't see the Bucks. I knew the Bucks would be good, but I didn't think they'd be this good. I thought you guys were going to be, you know, the other team right there with us. Yeah. I thought that was the Eastern Conference Finals from day one.
Yeah.
And it just...
And we played like hot garbage. We imploded.
Yeah, there's something wrong there. Like, there's some chemistry.
Yeah. No, Kyrie...
I don't know.
Kyrie ain't coming back to the Celtics.
That's what I think, too. Yeah. I don't see it, but... But yeah, man. Okay, so now that that's done, let's do the 3-hour recap of Double or Nothing. I want to weigh the pros and cons. I want to compare every aspect of it versus WWE.
Jesus, no.
You can bump Makabe.
My Excedra migraines across the room. But yeah. Hey, no. Actually, what I do want to have you on at some point. We're not going to have it now. I just want to have you on for a short preview right now and give you full congratulations and full credit. For your Raptors, but you are also the world's preeminent AAF fan, and we will have you on sometime to go painstakingly into the Alliance of American Football and the experience that you had because you were the one diehard, and brother, you put in the Lord's work for that league, and when it died, my heart went out to you, man, because you put in some work there. So we're going to have the AAF episode with Confirm Shoot. Matt, but that'll be another time, brother. We'll be rooting for the Raptors for you, if only because Golden State winning is getting old.
Oh, no doubt.
But best of luck. And we'll be pulling for you, man.
All right, man. It was fun. We'll do it again.
Talk to you soon, man.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
Over in the Place to Be Nation pop feed, after a 2-year hiatus, Dadcast is back, and JT and Don talk a variety of annoyances, including potty training, lying, Nickelodeon shows, and more. Talkin' Pop is back, and Tim and Jenny are joined by Stephen Kelly of Songs of Friends for a very special double date and lots of interesting conversation. Andy Atherton welcomes Jennifer Smith into the Laugh-In Theater to watch and talk about the iconic Dumb and Dumber. The hard-traveling fanboys deliver an installment of Countdown looking at Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. The NBA team stopped in to talk about the Pelicans hitting the draft lottery jackpot and what it means for the franchise. Be sure to keep an eye out on our social media feeds as the reboot of the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament is starting soon. Over on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, in the 5th episode of Row 1, Seat 1, we're all about music as I and a gaggle of guests talk touring the country with prominent 90s bands, hardcore music and wrestling, and of course, the Bruins Stanley Cup run. Chris Zellner and Devin Hales return for the Money in the Bank 2019 reaction show. And Soccer Scolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Willey have previewed Double or Nothing on the newest edition of Main Event.
Check out our social media pages and message board at bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your list. I'm here with Dan McCabe. Dan is one of the most interesting souls on the planet. Aside from being probably my favorite independent wrestler walking the earth right now, he sent me his list of stuff he's been to, and I would put it up against absolutely anyone. Dan, tell me how many concerts you've been to.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for having me. I'm one of those. I'm not OCD, but I decided very early on to keep a list of every show I went to, and like I update it like live, after I go to shows, as far as headliners and who's opening and venue and whatever and the date. And as of recording time here, we are at 582.
Yeah, I didn't want to bury the lead at the very beginning. I'm sorry. I saw that number and I'm like, we gotta kick off with that, because 582 concerts. I think you're holding the record of anybody who's been on the show. Even Al Getz, you may be stealing the most interesting man in the world title from Al Getz. I'm not quite sure.
You're way too kind. But I go to a lot of shows. A lot of them are like local shows, and some of them, I play a lot of shows too. Some shows, I should say. But music's always been a passion and a hobby, and it's how I spent a lot of my 20s and my 30s is going to local concerts and touring bands as well too, for sure. But
now, you started off at what age going to concerts?
The first show, which is like, it's kind of a wild lineup. The first show at the top of my list. I'm very much a child of the late 90s, early 2000s, like nu metal period. But the first show I ever went to was March of 99. It was right before I turned 15. And it was the ill-fated Marilyn Manson and Hole co-headlining tour that only lasted, I think, 3 dates before Hole pulled off because the two acts couldn't get along and they hated each other so much. So
I saw that and I had to you had to mention it because it absolutely killed me. It absolutely killed me. You basically, in seeing this, if name a band and Dan has seen them, or name a band that's cool and Dan has seen them.
I've seen plenty of not cool bands too. I definitely like, I don't know, like I said, I was definitely a nu metal, like 90s kid. And then like I went to college and I became kind of an indie rock guy. And then I got kind of ingratiated into like the local hardcore scene and, that kind of, led to me going to a lot of hardcore shows and festivals all over the place. And I'm still, I don't know what I am, like I definitely have a foot hardcore leaning into that world, but I think I'm more an indie rock guy more than anything. But
yeah, your stuff dovetails with me so bad because I started out as a hardcore kid in high school and college, and then I became an indie rock guy as I got older and I mellowed out. So this is basically like all the stuff I wanted to go to as I was younger, and now all the stuff I want to go to now. I'm seeing a lot of basically the stuff you've been to the most. Some of your favorites that you've been to early on. I'm seeing on here that you know, obviously early on was a lot of new metal stuff. Although I'm seeing, you know, Radiohead, Tool, Weezer, you know, Tool again, The Strokes, things like that in your first few years. In Flames, if you guys haven't heard In Flames was they're still around, but in their heyday, they were unbelievable. You saw them with Soilwork too, my God. I love that. I love that, that Swedish sound. Oh man, you're speaking my language. In Flames was a great band. White Stripes. You're seeing some mainstream stuff. Yeah. Pixies, things like that. So it's not like you're going to these obscure shows. And you're a kid at this point too. Did you have parental support? Were your parents, you know, I remember my first show, my mom basically waited in the parking lot while I was at a Pantera show. Was it a thing like that where your parents are waiting for you, or were they pretty chill with you going to whatever you wanted?
It wasn't until I was a little bit older that they were pretty chill. Like, I never went to a show with a parent until I was a little bit older and I started taking, like, my mom to shows. I don't know. My mom, like, she doesn't need anything, and I'm like an only child, and it was just the two of us. Mm-hmm. And so, like, as we got older, I kind of discovered that she just wanted to spend time with her son. And so, for like Christmas and birthdays, I would take her to like see shows that I figured like she would like. Some of the stuff is like stuff I knew she liked. Like, we'd go see Paul Simon together, or mm-hmm. Gordon Lightfoot, or. I'm trying to think what else we've gone to see together on this list, but some of it is stuff I just like take a chance on. Like, I took my mom to see the Decemberists because I figured she'd appreciate that. I took my mom to see
that's a really nice thing, by the way. Take your mom to a concert. That's
take your mom to a concert, guys. Like, if you don't know what to get your mom for like Christmas or her birthday, like, take your mom to see Billy Bragg. Like, my mom is like kind of like a socialist who grew up in the 70s and was a bit of a hippie, and like, she didn't know who Billy Bragg was, but I knew she'd appreciate the message and she'd appreciate the music, and she had like a hell of a time. I took my mom to see Rodriguez, which, if you don't know who Rodriguez is, first watch the documentary In Search of the Sugar Man, and then listen to Rodriguez's LP Cold Fact. Amazing, like, unknown kind of like folk rock singer from the 60s who garnered this like weird following in South Africa somehow. What? And have you seen the movie, or have you ever listened to Rodriguez?
I've never listened to Rodriguez, but you're giving me ideas because my mom's a social worker from Cape Cod.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, okay. I need to do this.
Listen to Rodriguez. Actually, see the movie, and his music, like the soundtrack to the movie is like all Rodriguez music. He's a real amazing story. He's just this guy from Detroit who put out these records that just didn't hit in America in the 60s, and then somehow they found their way to South Africa, and he was like bigger than Elvis or the Beatles in South Africa.
Jesus.
But no one in America knew who he was.
It's unbelievable. And
then they found him in like the mid 2000s, and he was just like a dude working a construction job in Detroit, and now he's like touring the world again because like they made this documentary about him, and everyone realized, oh, Rodriguez is the man. And like, he's got all this worldwide fame now. But anyways, I just happened to be scrolling through stuff that I knew. Yeah. I took my mom to, and yeah, that was one of them. But
that's amazing. Yeah, take your mom to a concert. If we learn anything,
take your mom to a concert. But yes, my mom did not ever go take me to concerts. My mom has also never seen me wrestle. That's another thing. She's never come to see me wrestle. But when I was like 12 or 13, I begged and pleaded for my mom to take me to see White Zombie. They were playing in Vancouver. It was an all-ages show, and it was shortly after Astro Creep came out.
Oh, yeah.
And she just figured there'd be, like, nothing but bikers and, like, just real, like, tough, like lowlifes, and my mom wanted nothing to do with it, so she would not take me to see White Zombie. So, no, I got to a certain age, and it was like, okay, like, you know, like, I don't know, I wasn't like, I was a relatively good kid, and like, I've never really, like, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, yeah. I've been straight edge for a very long time. And so I just, I don't know, I gained the trust of my parents and people to like, hey, we know that you're going to be safe and fine and don't mess up. And I managed to not mess up too bad. So, so yeah, no, not,
just so many of these that there's just such like my parents were like, not necessarily helicopter parents, but like, and I was straight edge in high school too. So, you know, there was a trust there, but you know, they were still asking a million questions, you know, and fair. I didn't go to nearly as much of the stuff that you did. So I was just wondering about that.
Fair.
So it's just like, wow, you're living my dream as a kid. So that's why I'm wondering. The one thing in your early thing that's in your early, shows that sticks out the most is the Polyphonic Spree. I actually saw the Polyphonic Spree in Atlanta, and yep. That is the weirdest ass show I've ever been to. Describe for people who've not seen Polyphonic Spree what a Polyphonic Spree show is like.
I'm trying to find it now. I think that was like 2007.
July of 07 is when you said you went to see Polyphonic Spree. But
I love those early Polyphonic Spree records. So it's basically like,
it's like a cult.
It's like, I don't, it's like secular or just like agnostic worship music, kind of, you know, like it's got a positive message, but there's no like religious like undertones or anything, but it's basically like, it's a 21 piece band, like a full like choir and strings and piano and
like people playing like random instruments too.
Yeah, and like the first couple records, they had this like this very like motif where they all came out wearing like these white robes.
That's when I saw them. They were all wearing robes, and I got a very Jim Jones vibe from them, but like in a really like nice, like all the Jim Jones people were nice.
Yeah, it's just a positive, fun experience. Yeah. The songs are really catchy, like they're super melodic, and like they had a couple hits that like, if you watch television in like the early to mid 2000s, you've heard some Polyphonic Spree songs because they were used. They were all over television. I remember an episode of Scrubs that used some of their songs like pretty effectively, and it's just fun. You know who the lead singer of the Polyphonic Spree is? Yes.
Yeah, I forget his name. He was in something.
He was in Tripping Daisy.
Tripping Daisies, yes. They
had a couple like radio hits in the 90s.
Yes, and yes. So, yeah, I knew he was in another prominent band. I forgot who he was with, but yes. Yeah. But it was just, that was the weirdest show I've ever been to because they were all in robes and there was like literally 25 people on stage, you know, and the only other time I've seen 25 people on stage was Busta Rhymes, and that was for entirely different reasons.
Fair. Another original member of the Polyphonic Spree was St. Vincent, who's gone on to...
She was
an OG member of the band, yeah, and now she's like huge indie rock, you know, like star, right?
But I did not realize she got her start there. That's fascinating. Yeah. There's obviously a huge hardcore theme throughout this.
Yeah,
we talked with Jesse and Josh last week about hardcore. You're in a band that's hardcore. You're in a hardcore band. When did you start playing music? Talk about your band a little bit too.
Sure. I play in bands that are hardcore adjacent, okay. I would say. I haven't ever been in like a straight up hardcore band. Yeah. It's funny because like I play with people who have been in hardcore bands and we're all kind of part of the local hardcore scene, but we play stuff that's just like a little just weirder or like not really right in that lane. So the closest thing I'd say that I played in to hardcore is I played in a band called Taxa. That's kind of a bit of on a hiatus right now. Okay. And it's kind of a post-hardcore band, like I'd say akin to like Unwound or Fugazi, kind of like an early 90s sound. But like it's with dudes who have played in like straight up hardcore bands.
Sure.
I started playing guitar when I was a teenager and I was just not good at it and I didn't want to practice and I just never really like progressed. And it wasn't until I was I kind of put it down for like 10 years and I picked it up again in my mid 20s because I had a series of injuries from wrestling that kind of put me on the shelf for like a year, and I decided, okay, I need something that's going to like stimulate me creatively because wrestling is so much more of a creative outlet for me than it is a physical outlet, although it is both, obviously. And so I needed something to kind of stimulate that creative side of me. And also I was trying to impress a girl because that's mm-hmm. what people do.
As one does.
And she herself was a musician. And so I was like, okay, this girl wants to like play music with me and like write songs together. So I need to like get better at doing that. So, and we ended up dating for like 3 years and writing a bunch of bad indie rock songs. So, I was just playing guitar and, going to local hardcore shows. And that's kind of where I met my group of friends, and they needed someone to fill in on something. And that's kind of how I ended up in my current, I refer to us as a collective. There's sure. like nine or 10 of us. We all share a practice space. Between all of us, we kind of make up a five or six different bands. There's a lot of crossover. And there's only like one or two of them that I'm in currently that are pretty active. The only one that I'd say is really active is a band called Griefwalker that I play guitar in. And I will, if you follow me on social media, I definitely will constantly be plugging our shows and our releases and whatever. And that band's more akin to like, it's kind of a heavier, darker sound, more along the lines of like Swans or Neurosis.
Okay.
We get grouped in with like post-metal bands all the time. We don't really consider ourselves a metal band, but like, I don't know what you would consider us. It's like kind of weird for the sake of weird. So, I mean, we just like to play with whatever. We've played with like some dark electronic bands. We've played, with like some, we played with this band called 40 Watt Sun from England at a festival last year. And the singer, I guess, had a bunch of credentials in like pretty famous doom bands, but like it was like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, he had the most beautiful voice I've ever heard, honestly. The only person I've ever seen on stage who actually was chugging honey between songs.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, it's awesome.
Because of his vocal cords.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we kind of get grouped with the kind of everyone and anyone, as long as there's kind of, I mean, you have to recognize that you're strapped in because the songs are like 10 minutes long. And it's kind of weird, but I mean, we get kind of in that whole post-rock kind of experimental world. That's sort of where that's our lane. So, but we all started as dudes going to hardcore shows and playing, you know, playing in hardcore adjacent bands. And that's kind of where we just, that's what happens when you get older and you kind of get sick of playing in hardcore bands. You do kind of stuff that's beyond that, I guess. So,
because the bands you've seen the most, like, tell me a little bit about who Vacant State and the Transmitters are, and then Converge, for people who don't know Converge, because those are your top three bands that you've seen.
Yeah, so again, because I'm OCD, at the bottom of the list that he's referencing, mm-hmm. I have the bands I've seen the most and how many times I've seen them. So Vacant State and the Transmitters are both local bands in Vancouver. They and I've seen them like a million times because obviously they play here all the time. And they sound nothing like each other, but I would like two of my all-time favorite bands. And if you've never heard of them, you need to check out both. Vacant State are like akin to like an early '80s like Boston hardcore band, like SSD Control or Negative FX.
Speak my language.
Yeah, not like I was going to say Negative Approach. Obviously, not a Boston band. That's a like a Detroit band, but Negative Approach or. That vibe, that like early '80s, like hardcore with like a punk tinge, just absolutely my favorite band to go see. They're on like a long term hiatus, but like there's some talks that they might do like one final show, and that will be just like bonkers. The Transmitters are like a power pop band from Vancouver, akin to, I would say, what's the Undertones or why am I having a brain fart on the band that I'm thinking of? Give me a second. The Buzzcocks, that's the word.
Sure, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm, yep.
So like the Buzzcocks or the Undertones, it's like that like late 70s, early 80s, like mod, punk rock kind of thing. They all like wear like very sharp looking suits when they play. Like the catchiest band ever to come out of Vancouver. such a blast to see them live. They play like maybe once or twice a year nowadays, and never outside of Vancouver. So, but I've seen them a million times. Converge is a band that are from Boston.
Yeah, I grew up with them.
They just played Vancouver on Friday. I think I sent you the list before I updated it, because I saw them on Friday again. Mm-hmm. So one more time to add to the list. And they're like a metallic hardcore band. They've been at it for like 25 years.
Yep.
Always put on an amazing show. They've got a real like strong artistic vision as well, with their packaging and their album artwork and their merchandise. The lead singer is a guy named Jacob Bannon. He is like a visual artist. Like that's what he does for a living.
Brilliant.
In addition to he's being the singer of
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. He's also a diehard MMA and pro wrestling fan. And whenever I see Converge play, I will always like punish him about MMA, because like everyone wants to talk about how much they love the music, but I always will try and BS with him about fighting, and he usually appreciates that. Such a powerhouse as a live act and on record. I could see that band forever and ever. As far as like touring bands go, all the other bands that are at the top of my list are all local bands. So, yeah.
But then in here as well, you've seen Tool 4 times, you've seen Weezer 4 times, you've seen Modest Mouse a bunch of times. So it's not like you're just going to see, you know, local hardcore bands and stuff like that. You've seen the Yeah Yeah Yeahs a bunch of times. You've seen Tegan and Sarah a bunch of times. You've seen, you go and see. I mean, you're an equal opportunity, you know, concert attender as well. You know, talk about some of the more mainstream shows you've seen. You go to a lot of festivals as well.
Yeah, so if we're talking like mainstream, mm-hmm. like arena shows, mm-hmm. Let me look up.
Or even like, you know, kind of on the verge of mainstream and stuff like that. Talk about some of the stuff that more people will know that are listening to the show, that some of the better shows you've been to of more popular bands that people
for
might know.
Sure. Yeah. So if we're just talking straight up arena shows, hands down, without question, the best show I've ever seen in an arena is Bruce Springsteen. Like such an amazing performer, mm-hmm. like still in his 60s and will play like 3.5 hour long sets. I've seen him twice. The last time I saw him was like 3 years ago. He did a tour where he played the entirety of his album, The River, from start to finish, God. And then played another hour and a half on top of that.
He's America's greatest poet, in my opinion.
He's so good. He's such a good performer. He's got a new record coming out this year, so I hope he tours, because I will straight up go see him. Like, I'll never stop going to see Bruce Springsteen. I've seen The Cure a couple times live. They're another band that play like for 3 hours and are just like such amazing performers. Not the most charismatic individuals, obviously, but great. Who else? A band that I've seen a bunch who are like pretty big in the indie rock world, but I don't know if necessarily everyone knows them, although you probably would know their music because it's been featured in a lot of movies, is an Icelandic band called Sir Ros.
Mm-hmm.
And like beautiful musicians. Yeah. Who there's a couple of really good documentaries. There's one called I think it's Heim, H-E-I-M, that's them like touring and playing all these like little small towns in Iceland.
Their music's like inspirationally good.
It's mostly like instrumental, mm-hmm. or in Icelandic, or some of the albums are actually in like a made up language called Hopelandic. Which literally has no meaning whatsoever. Like the words, it's up to interpretation. It's about the listener finding meaning in how the actual words sound to them, I guess. Who else have I seen a bunch that are amazing live? Neurosis, amazing, like legendary heavy band from mm-hmm. the Bay Area. Always put on a crazy good live show. Funny fact, Gabe Sapolsky is like a diehard Neurosis fan.
Is he really?
He flew himself to the Northwest to go see Neurosis play in Seattle and Vancouver. And then they did like an Evolve seminar in Seattle just because he was going to be there.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, Neurosis, amazing live. Who else? I'm kind of getting more towards more newer stuff. The Flaming Lips, holy shit. If you've never seen the Flaming Lips live, the Flaming Lips are like a religious experience. Like, even if you don't like their music, it's just like, I can't imagine anyone going to see the Flaming Lips and not having the absolute time of your life. It's just like so joyful and so such a loving environment. And like, I'm going to sound like an old hippie here, but like, honestly, like I've had some of the most amazing times of my life going to see the Flaming Lips live. Big shows. Sorry,
how are the Yeah Yeah Yeahs live? Because I love them, but I never got a chance to see them live.
I've seen them, I want to say, 3 times. Mm-hmm. The first time was one of the first bar shows I ever went to when I was legal age. I saw them play on Fever to Tell at the Commodore, which is like
awesome.
It's kind of like the biggest bar in Vancouver. It's like a 900 cap room. That's kind of like any big indie rock band has probably played there. Nirvana played there back in the day. I love that record, Fever to Tell. Oh, yeah. And they were great then. It was still like, she's always has that kind of arty like tinge, yeah, to her. Karen O does. But yeah, so they were great then. I saw them again on the next record, which was Show Your Bones, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
And that was at the Orpheum, which is like a 2,000 cap theater in Vancouver. It was when they were kind of getting more and more mainstream. You'd hear their songs on the radio. Like Gold Line was the big like single on that record. You played a bunch of their songs on a recent episode too, I remember.
Yeah.
I mean, she's super charismatic. The other two dudes are like just kind of like in the pocket doing their job, like, but they're like very good musicians. And some of those like songs, like, I don't know if it's their most famous song, but like probably like Maps. Would you say that's the most famous?
Yeah, Maps or Wide Control. Yeah.
Right. So like Maps is in like a weird time signature, and like their drummer actually plays to a click on that song. You'll see, if you ever see like live footage of the IAS playing that song, he's always got a headphones on.
Really?
Because it's just like, but he's super just like steady, like to the point, on time. Like he's a really just like solid technical drummer. And then I saw them play at Sasquatch, which was a festival in the Northwest they don't do anymore. Unfortunately, I went to that festival 3 years in a row. And it's at a venue called The Gorge, which is in a town called George, Washington. It's about 3 hours east of Seattle. It's halfway between Seattle and Spokane.
Okay.
And they still do shows there. Like Tool will play there, or like Dave Matthews Band plays there all the time. And it's just this outdoor amphitheater on the edge of the Columbia River Valley. And it's this giant gorge in the middle of nature. And it is like the most picturesque, like anyone listening at home, Google The Gorge in Washington, and it's like straight up the prettiest concert venue on earth. And I saw the IAS play there in 2009. I'm trying to remember who the headliners were that year. Oh, who else did I see? I saw Explosions in the Sky. I saw Nine Inch Nails headline that year, though. That was killer. Fleet Foxes, The Decemberists, Animal Collective. Like, it was just like a who's who of...
That's awesome.
Like, indie rock bands. So, yeah, no.
Who have you not seen that you want to see that's like... That you can conceivably, you know...
That I could conceivably... Yeah. I could conceivably see?
That you could conceivably see, yeah.
Oh, God. Let me think. Who's left? I mean, there's like some shows coming up that are like pretty exciting for me. I'm going to see Chromatics for the first time in a couple weeks, who are like this kind of electronic band from Portland who don't really play live much anymore, and I think they're based in LA now, but it's the first time seeing them. This isn't like an all-timer thing, but I'm going to see ELO next month.
That's
and
cool.
I'm really excited to see ELO. Like, my answer is if I could see anyone, which conceivably I couldn't see these guys anymore, yeah, but if I could go back to 1982 and see the Bad Brains,
right,
that would be like, that would be it for me. Same thing, like Fugazi, I never got to see Fugazi play, which like they'll never play again. So I don't know if there's anyone like on earth that I haven't seen that like that I would want to see. Like, there's bands that I've seen before that I would love to see again. Mm-hmm. Just don't play that often, or like one of my absolute favorite live acts is a band called The Marked Men, and they're like this power pop, like punk rock band from Texas, and they're all just like regular dudes who have jobs, and they only play like maybe 3 shows a year.
Oh wow.
They're playing in New York City, but it's the same weekend as SummerSlam in Toronto, which I will be in Toronto that weekend for other reasons. And so, unfortunately, I won't be able to go see them. So there's stuff like that that, like, I wish I could go see. But it's stuff I've seen before, so really I can't complain, I guess. But
so speaking of your other reasons, the reason I know you and the reason a lot of people know you.
The reasons anybody who's listening to this podcast knows me. You don't know me as the guy who goes to a lot of concerts.
Though you should. You should, because this is an impressive – it's very impressive that you've been to 582 shows.
Before you make the transition, I was going to say, I was contemplating when I hit the 500 mark, and I didn't do it, but maybe when I hit the 600 mark, I was thinking about writing like some kind of long form like – essay or something about maybe the 50 best shows I've ever been to.
You should.
Just for my own personal, I don't know, like just for posterity's sake. And I like writing and I just don't do it enough. So
if you want a forum, anyway. I can talk to the Place to Be guys. So
sure.
Let me know. Just let me know. The reason that the people in this podcast know you is because, as I mentioned, you are the best independent wrestler walking on the planet, in my opinion. Sure. And dovetailing with your very busy concert schedule has been how many years of being a wrestler?
So that's kind of a funny question. Mm-hmm. I technically got trained in 2003 for a group called All Star Wrestling based out of Surrey, British Columbia. I had a handful of matches with them, and then they went out of business, and I had other priorities. And so I didn't wrestle really like full time again until, 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
But if people are like, oh, when did you get trained? Well, 16 years ago, technically. But I haven't been working a full time schedule for 16 years. So I like hardly consider myself like a vet or anything like that. There were definitely big chunks of time where playing music and going to shows took priority, and now, in the twilight of what should be the twilight of my indie wrestling career, is when I decided to take it seriously. And
four or 5 years to say, okay, I'm going to really start taking this seriously, because you've blown up the last 4 or 5 years and become, maybe you were this good all along and we didn't know, but you've really blown up the last 4 or 5 years, especially the last 2 years or so. Have started really popping on everyone's radar as this revelation, especially in your style, as an independent wrestler. Did something click in your brain? Did you just say, I'm going to finally take this seriously? Did you have it in you all along and just say, I'm going to finally show it? What was the turning point? What was the tipping point?
It's no secret, and like it's definitely not as taboo as it used to be. Like, a lot of that time that I wasn't, doing anything, I was backyarding, and I met a lot of people who I still consider friends to this day, who make up a good majority of the U.S. independent scene now. But honestly, what it was 3-2-1 Battle in Seattle kind of getting some steam behind it, and going down to work those shows, which started off as just kind of like a cult thing in Seattle in front of, 125 people, 150 people on a Friday night, which turned into running every other Friday night, which turned into, filming all the shows and putting them up on YouTube, which turned into, we're streaming the shows live on Twitch now. They stream live on Twitch, then they go up on demand on Twitch, or the matches individually go up on YouTube. And just kind of gaining a bit of a following in Seattle, really not having zero expectations, having friends in Seattle saying, hey, you're pretty good. Come work on these shows, have fun, whatever. and doing that to the point where picking up steam, you know, getting my name more out there within the Northwest and working more shows around in Oregon and in Washington and in British Columbia. And then honestly, like, it was just the people who make the decisions, who had maybe more faith in me than I did in myself, saying, you know, we know how important it would be for you to wrestle Timothy Thatcher. We know, you know, how highly you think of his work and how we think you'll match up with him as an opponent. And having that match and it going better than I ever could have imagined, and the right people online seeing that match and discovering, like, hey, who the hell is this guy? He had a match with Timothy Thatcher that, you know, all these people
tore it down.
All these people over the world, like, love, you know, or at least like. And honestly, it was kind of that picking up steam and me realizing, like, oh, I actually maybe have, like, something that I can show here. And, like, I've got a skill set that is different. That's one thing. I have, especially in the last year and a half, once things started to kind of roll and snowball, I've made a conscious decision to try and stand out and be different. And I definitely stand out in the Northwest. There's really not many people who work like me up here. But even on the independent scene at large, I try to have a different kind of skill set. And it's not going to be for everybody. And there's certain things about me that people will definitely get hung up on. But it's been enough that enough people have been kind enough to champion me, and they're people who have enough influence, and that, you know, here we are here, that, you know, you and the people listening at home know who I am and want to hear me talk about going to see the AAS. So.
So describe your style for people who have never seen you wrestle, because I describe it as a real throwback style, almost European influence. But who are your influences in your wrestling style?
It's a throwback, but it's kind of a hybridized throwback. I definitely, like, it's easy to say, like, you know, like, when I was younger, like, a big influence was, like, a Dean Malenko or something. Yeah. And then in the last little bit, as far as indie boom goes, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. was obviously an influence, and Timothy Thatcher was an influence. And, I mean, my favorite wrestler of all time is The Destroyer. Mm-hmm. I've got a Destroyer portrait tattoo. So before he died, I wasn't just jumping on the bandwagon. I've had it for years. And I've got an autographed personalized Destroyer picture, which, like, means the world to me. So I never got to meet the man, unfortunately. So that's unfortunate. But
Pete sees a lot of Billy Robinson in your game too, my friend.
I love watching Billy Robinson and Jumbo Tsuruta and like all these like 70s and 80s throwbacks for sure. But like, I appreciate people who can do it now and are trying to do something different now. My big thing, I'm influenced a lot by mixed martial arts or boxing, you know, like I like to bring in influences of like realistic things that are like more kind of subtle things that you'll see in a real fight, but that you don't necessarily see in pro wrestling, you know, like things like body shots actually being transitions, you know, people might throw a shot to the body and it's just like, you know, whatever, but like actually having it work like a boss root and liver shot would in a pancrase fight, you know, where like hit someone hard enough in the liver and they're going to go down. Right. So, little things like that, things about, just nuancey stuff that a lot of people don't think about and people at home don't necessarily think about, but when they, if you're the type who really appreciates detail and thought being put into why things happen and things making sense, I want to be like your wrestler, you know, like I want to be the guy who provides that niche for people who appreciate the subtlety in wrestling that not necessarily everyone cares about. And maybe that's me being like the ultimate like hipster, you know, in that like I'm working towards a smaller fan base, and I'm happy for that, you know. Like, I want to be the wrestler for people who don't like what the mainstream wrestling is, you know. So, but I like, you know, I like what's going on elsewhere in the world, right? I'm not just like some person who's got his like nose stuck up in the air, but like that's what it takes to be different nowadays. You know, you got to find your lane and go down it, right? And
had so, you always wrestled like that, even when you were backyarding, were you always kind of the master of subtlety, or has that evolved over time as you've gotten older and wiser?
I've gotten more and more subtle in my old age, but it's funny, like, now that there's all this discussion of like backyard wrestling being cool again, and like GCW is running a backyard show on the 4th of July, and a lot of old like friends and contemporaries of mine are being booked on that show, and I've seen people online like clamoring like for me to be booked on that show, and I never really wrestled as a backyarder. Like, even when I was backyarding as a kid, I was the guy who was watching the Dean Malenko tapes wanting to, like, implement submissions and, like, psychology into his matches. So, yeah, it's definitely evolved, and it's become more and more, like, subtle and nuanced and detailed. But, like, I was always kind of into that stuff as a kid. So, yeah, so.
Interesting. That's I couldn't see you as the flippy guy, so that's what I was always wondering. Like, how are you as a backyarder? Like,
I can do like some stupid stuff, and I still will occasionally throw out like a crazy high spot here or there. Yeah. You know, sometimes I like to just throw it in there just to show that I can do it.
Yeah.
And to catch people off guard, they don't expect it. Like, I do like 3 topes a year, but I like try to make them mean something. You know, or if I just will get randomly in a mood, it'll just be like, hey, I feel like doing something just to catch people off guard, you know?
Now, it's my opinion, and you can agree or disagree with me on this, that you're in Vancouver, you're near Vancouver. I see that as a handicap for you, because there is a definite East Coast and Midwest bias, especially with independent wrestling, in my opinion, with especially with people being able to get booked, and with just kind of where the spotlight is, would you agree that it's a little bit harder for you as someone who's not only necessarily on the western part of the country, but in the Northwest and in Canada?
It's definitely harder to get noticed and to break out here. I'll say like the 2 or 3 big independent names of the last 10-15 years who broke out from the Northwest are people who moved away from the Northwest in order to break out, those being Kyle O'Reilly and El Fantasmo, who's, you know, currently killing it in New Japan, but he had to move to England for the last 2 years for anyone to know who he was. I mean, the internet has made the world a much smaller place. And if it wasn't for the internet and how accessible live wrestling is and like, you know, live to tape kind of stuff that goes up really quickly on YouTube or on independentwrestling.tv or whatever, that has definitely made the world a much smaller place where like someone like myself can have a fan base of people in Ireland or wherever, you know, Tennessee or anywhere in the world, you know. Because otherwise, like, no one would know who I am, right? Between Vancouver, Seattle, and Portland, there's that kind of corridor between the three cities. You can get from Vancouver to Portland in, like, 5-6 hours. And so, you know, there's independents that run in all three cities and the surrounding areas. And everyone kind of knows everyone within, you know, this, like, Northwest pocket kind of thing, right? And I work pretty regularly for a lot of the groups here, no problem, right? But if you're to go south from Portland, you're looking at an additional 11, 12 hours until you're in the Bay Area in Northern California.
That's insane.
And if you're to go east from Vancouver, you're looking at 12 hours until you hit Calgary. So there's really nowhere to go elsewhere that's, you know, that's, I mean, there's a lot going on in the Bay Area, but, you know, that's 12 hours away. And Calgary used to be kind of a hotbed. It's really not now, but still, it's somewhere else to work, but it's 12 hours away. And so, you know, like if you're someone who lives in like the central U.S., Chicago, St. Louis, Cleveland, wherever.
Or I'm in Chattanooga. I have, you know, within 8 hours, I have, you know, a million options just in, near me in Chattanooga, Tennessee, you know?
Yeah. From, I mean, you can go to St. Louis, Cleveland, mm-hmm. Cincinnati, Atlanta. There's probably places in the Carolinas.
Nashville, I mean, you know. I'm going to Chicago this week. I'm doing a Chicago-Nashville loop this week.
Yeah.
And I can do a St. Louis-Chicago-Nashville loop this week if I really wanted to. And yep. All of those are within an 8-hour driving distance.
Yes. So, I mean, the West Coast is spread out. It's definitely been detrimental to me in the last couple of years. It's made breaking out of the Northwest harder and something I've had to work a little bit harder towards. And that's a goal of mine. I want people to want to bring me in to like add something different to their show, to be someone who stands out on their show and can hopefully work with more and more people who are of, you know, a similar, I'll say pedigree or kind of name value. You know, I want to work with the dudes who are killing it on shows through the Midwest and the South and the Northeast, who are like the guys who are featured on independentwrestling.tv every weekend. You know, I want to be one of those guys. It's just so much harder for me to do it because I'm not a car distance away.
And that's one of the good things about independentwrestling.tv is it's made the world smaller. And, you know, and, you know, to an extent to some of the other subscription services, you know, one of the big revelations for me was that Zona 23 thing, which is the Mexican junkyard show. Have you seen it?
I watched that crazy scramble match they had last year that like people were going nuts about. That match was so awesome.
It was unbelievable. So awesome. Lane showed me one of their shows, and it was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. But I mean, you know, the fact that I'm here in Chattanooga, I can watch a Mexican junkyard match show. You know, it's made the world smaller. I agree with you there. But still, you know, you're on an island, and it has to be tough. So to that extent, you've still made some travel. So talk about some of the places that you have traveled to and have made an impact in. Because, you know, we hung out a little bit of Mania weekend. You made Black Label. Talk about some of the places that you have been able to travel to and do plan to travel to going forward, too.
Sure. Everyone knows how much of an influencer he is and how much he can help make or break people. But, like, honestly, I have to give credit to Dylan Hales as much as I hate to because everyone's always pumping his tires, but he honestly deserves it. And he's someone I consider to be a friend, not just, you know, like a promoter or whatever. He's someone who, you know, was championing me from the kind of early get-go and was someone who wanted to bring me into SUP very early on, and it was just trying to find a way to do it and a time to do it. And so that was the first place outside of the Northwest that took a chance on me and gave me a platform to have a match against someone like Jake Parnell, who's been killing it on the indies, and show that I can hang with like a Jake Parnell and have a kick-ass match. So I wrestled in SUP last November. This past February, I did a weekend in the Midwest for Freelance in Chicago and Black Label Pro in Indiana, and had a real fun time. You know, it's all about making contacts and meeting new people and showing that you can work with other people who you're on your level or, you know, a step above. And then, honestly, Mania weekend, I'm very thankful that I had one promoter reach out to me and who will not be named, but kind of set the ball in motion that, like, hey, people might actually want to see me and I got to make this happen. And I was able to have four bookings like Mania weekend in New Jersey, which a lot of people of the same kind of stature as me were not getting four bookings that weekend. And so I'm ever grateful, and I'm just lucky that there's enough people who are into whatever weirdo style I bring to your wrestling show, and and allowed me the opportunity to showcase it. Now, admittedly, I wish that I could have had more bookings that were kind of more up my alley.
But am I appreciative for the spot? The match of the weekend, though.
In your estimation.
In many estimations.
In some estimations. And I wish I would have had more chances to do what I did with Fred with other people. I wish I could have had that match with Eric Royal on the Nova show, because I think we would have – honestly think we would have killed it. And I really want to wrestle Eric Royal at some point. I just – I don't know. I feel like I need that match to happen, like for things to come full circle.
Y'all would tear it down.
So, yeah, I'm super gracious to the people who have brought me in, to the people in the Northwest who bring me in, who previously wouldn't have even given me a second thought. You know, 3-2-1 Battle in Seattle is the group that made me, and they gave me a platform to show that I can hang with, you know, with the Timothy Thatchers of the world. You know, I've wrestled B-Boy, who's like a legend on the indies, and I've really grown from working with him.
And he'll be with you at SCI.
He will be with me at SCI. Yep. I'm stoked for that. I mean, never in a million billion years did I think I'd ever get the chance to wrestle Negro Navarro. I used to joke about it as being a dream, and then it happened, and that's just bonkers. So I realistically owe my, you know, career, for lack of a better word, but my current success to 3-2-1 entrusting me to, you know, have the quality matches that I've had. And now I feel like it's my role to, you know, champion them to the world and say, hey, yeah, you may have seen me wrestle insert name here on a 3-2-1 battle show, but like there's more to 3-2-1 battle than just me. And so you need to give the rest of our roster an opportunity. You need to check out a show. You need to come see a show live. You need to watch us on Twitch. Because, you know, like they've done the favor for me, and now I need to do the favor for them. So this has been kind of a run-on sentence, but yeah, I realize there's a second part to your question is where can you see me soon? I'm beyond excited to be wrestling in the Scenic City Invitational this coming August. This show is all about being a fan. And I mean, first and foremost, I was a wrestling fan. I was a tape trader. And I watch those Scenic City Invitational shows every year. Like, I watch them on internet, independentwrestling.tv, and I see that there's something special there. And I'm so just humbled to be chosen to be a part of it. And I want to kill it. You know, I want
my number one request to come to my city, and I'm over the moon that you're coming.
I'm stoked too, man. I'm good. I got to have that Coca-Cola cake, you know? So, and like nothing else, because I'm a vegetarian and the South does not cater to vegetarians.
I'm the guy who puts together the restaurant list, and I'm going to find you all the restaurants you need to find. Don't worry about it. I got you.
I appreciate it. I eat eggs. So I'll be okay. But, and then the other thing that's huge for me is, I was asked by WXW in Germany to represent them at their first ever Ambition show in Toronto this coming August, in correlation with SummerSlam weekend. And that's honestly to see WXW put a graphic up on their social media saying WXW Ambition comes to Toronto featuring Timothy Thatcher, the person who I consider to be the best professional wrestler on the planet, Yuki Ishikawa, a man who really, you know, popularized and helped create a style that I think is second to none, you know, a style of wrestling that I wish I could do every time out. It's just not the easiest thing to do with someone who also doesn't do that style. And myself, like literally it said featuring Timothy Thatcher, Yuki Ishikawa, and Daniel Makabe. And that's like, that's a mind fuck among mind fucks, you know?
Good company. So good company.
It's good company, you know? And so like, I'm just beyond elated that I'm going to have the opportunity. You know, I've never wrestled in Toronto. I want to wrestle in Canada more. Like, I want to go all over the place. I want to go to Quebec. I want to wrestle for Interspecies Wrestling. Shout out to Mike Crotch for giving me a platform to wrestle Mania Week in New Jersey, even though he wasn't there, you know? Like, I want to go all over the place, but it's not that easy. Canada's a massive fucking country. Yeah. So
So you have opportunities coming up. You've been absolutely killing it the last few years. Want to close with as well, you sent me your list of events, and you famously wrestle in soccer jerseys.
Yes.
I am of the belief that aside from maybe hockey, soccer is the most fun sport to attend live.
Sure.
And I want you to champion soccer for me as well as a live sport. Because you are the number one Vancouver Whitecaps supporter that I know, and maybe on the planet. Preach the soccer gospel.
I'm definitely not the number one Whitecaps supporter on the planet. Maybe in the wrestling world.
Maybe in the wrestling world, yeah.
Yeah, no, they've got a bunch of supporters groups that are like crazy diehards. I mean, I'm a season ticket holder, and I sit in what's considered the supporters section, which is like the one end of the stadium where everyone stands up and chants and sings and waves flags and goes nuts when they score goals and whatever. So, but I have been a Whitecaps season ticket holder for 5 years. I am a Chelsea supporter. Sorry to all the EPL fans out there who hate Chelsea. There's plenty of you. I recognize that. And I'm a Chelsea supporter for the stupidest reason ever. I've gone into detail on that on other podcasts. So I'll be cheering them on. Actually, as you listen to this, it will be today. They're playing in the Europa League final against Arsenal. Hopefully they won. I don't know. Like, I think some people consider it boring. I think it's a game that never stops moving. The clock never stops. There's no downtime. It's not like football where it's start, stop. It's not like, hockey or basketball where they, there's lots of like line changes or substitutions. It's these guys run like 25 miles a game, you know, like it's up and down the field. It's nonstop work ethic. It's the stamina and the cardio that these guys have. And it's just there's an atmosphere and a community when it comes to supporting your local soccer team that doesn't exist in any other sport to me. Like, sure, there's tailgating in the NFL, and even in certain like MLB franchises, you have the people who are just crazy diehards and like, live and die by the team. But like, I mean, no one's going to, get into like a street brawl over, supporting certain NFL or MLB teams. And like that exists in soccer in certain parts of the world, like people have died for supporting their teams. Not that I condone that. No. I think that's ridiculous, but it just shows that the passion that comes along with it. So I love soccer or football, whatever you want to call it. I've only ever been to one game in Europe. I went to a Manchester United game when I was visiting friends in Manchester like 10 years ago. I want to go to a Chelsea game. It's really hard to get tickets, and they're really expensive, especially those like top flight English teams.
Yeah.
I'm hoping someday in the future to get booked in Europe. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. If you're listening to this and you want to book me in Europe, please book me in Europe. And I hope to go to football games while I'm over there, because that would be just amazing. So I will say, if you're trying to kind of break the ice and get into soccer or football, go see like your local MLS club if you're in North America,
or your local fourth division club, because Chattanooga has a fourth division club that draws between 8,000 to 10,000 people, and it's the most fun thing you've ever seen on the planet.
And that's the crazy thing. Like Cincinnati just got a team this year, and I know that's not super close, but like they had like a second division team that was drawing like 30,000 to their games, and so they just had to give them an MLS franchise. And same thing with Atlanta. Atlanta's only in their second or third season, and they're already 75. Yeah. They draw 75,000 people to their games. Like, I don't know if you noticed on my list, but I said that I went to a Seattle Sounders versus Portland Timbers game in 2013, and it said highest MLS attendance with an asterisk. And that's because at the time it was the highest MLS attendance, because it was, it was a derby match, it was rivals, Seattle versus Portland. It was also the first game where Clint Dempsey played for Seattle, who's a big, U.S. national player.
Love Deuce. Deuce is my favorite soccer player who ever lived.
Fair. It was a massive game. Atlanta has like broken that record like 10 times over since
in the dome. Yeah, and it's apparently the most crazy atmosphere on the planet. Yeah.
It's nuts. And they like they've already won the championship in like their second year. So go see a local, you know, there's nothing like it. People are really passionate about it. And or watch a big, you know, watch the World Cup. Watch, you know, the UEFA Champions League final is coming up this week. It's Liverpool versus Tottenham Hotspur. That's going to be a huge game where people are going to be watching all over the world. So, and like, I don't have a horse in that race, but like, I'm going to get up early and watch that game because it's a big event, you know? So, find something to watch. Watch it with friends. Watch it with people who are into it, you know? Like, in you will gain the passion and you will gain the fervor. So
awesome. Yeah, you soccer is so much fun live. I appreciate that someone else appreciates it the way that I do, because just going to my local Chattanooga football club games is the best bang for your buck in the city of Chattanooga, and you are very lucky to have an MLS club by you that you can have that on a much grander scale. So, Dan, it has been an absolute pleasure, my friend. Anything, get your plugs in now. You talked about some of the stuff you'll be at going forward, but plug your Twitter, plug any of your other social media aspects right here.
Okay. Follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Daniel Maccabe. Twitter, I talk about upcoming bookings. I post pictures of my dog. I give you daily music recommendations. I tell you about upcoming bookings that I'm just ridiculously lucky to have at this point, but I appreciate nonetheless. Please follow 321 Battle on social media. Every other Friday night, streaming live 9 p.m. Pacific at twitch.tv/321battle. It's not for everyone. It's weird wrestling. It's not super indie wrestling, but it's wrestling with character. It's wrestling with a little bit of everything. You're going to get hard-hitting action. You're going to get comedy. You're going to get characters. You're going to get maybe the best fan base as far as die-hard people who like bleed 321 Battle. They come every other Friday night. They're not pro wrestling fans. They're 321 Battle fans. And I thank them for supporting me and making it a destination for people who appreciate independent wrestling and kind of the weirder end and the more, you know, different end of independent wrestling. And if you are at a show, like I said, I mean, you can come see me wrestle in Seattle. I'll be wrestling in Portland coming up, the Northwest, Vancouver. I'm all over the Northwest. Follow me on social media. You can see my upcoming dates. Scenic City Invitational in August, WXW in August, and hopefully elsewhere abroad. If you're there, come say hi. You know, if you buy a t-shirt, I appreciate it. Ben has bought my shirts before, so I appreciate it.
Wore one yesterday, brother.
I appreciate it. And if not, you know, just come say hi. I like to think I'm a friendly, approachable person, and let's just BS about life or music or wrestling or whatever. Like, I just like to meet people, and the people who support me, believe me, I more than appreciate you. Sometimes I don't understand you. This is all kind of a crazy dream. Who would have thought this would have happened? Some dude from, you know, suburban Vancouver, would get to wrestle his idol and then get to travel all over America and show people that maybe he can do this. I don't know. So, thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to talk and talk about stuff that I'm passionate about. And, I wish you the best of luck with, this podcast, because it's a cool idea, and I'm glad people are listening. So
Dan, you're a friend, you're a great man. I can't wait to see you in August, brother.
Thank you, man. I can't wait.
Thank you. Talk to you later.